Hello, and welcome to Legal Bites. If you're new here, my name is Alita. I'm a lawyer licensed in California and DC, and on this channel, we explain the law one bite at a time. We don't give legal advice, but we do talk about how the law works and try to look into our crystal ball to see how things might turn out. If you're enjoying this on YouTube, we'd love it if you could like the video, subscribe to the channel, share it with friends, all the great YouTube-y stuff. And if you want to listen while out and about, we're now offering our live streams in podcast form where you can leave a rating and review. Links are in the description below, as well as to our clips channel where you can find some of the best clips taken from our live streams. Otherwise, if you want to catch me elsewhere, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to support the channel, you can do so on Locals, Patreon, or by becoming a YouTube member, or by buying some really awesome Legal Bites merch. Again, all links are in the description below. And with that said, let's get into it. Hello, hello, and good morning, afternoon. I always do this every single time, every damn time. Just wanted to say hi. We've got a bunch of folks here to say hi to. Look at this. We've got Last Mumsy says, let's get ready to rumble. Brett Miglia, good morning. Shay Rosa, hello everyone. Hey Shay. I Bella Vita Loca I says hello all. Kelly Clancy from South Carolina. We've got Shindog City from South Central Indiana. And then Roger Agnew from Kansas. We've got Liz Botts from Chicago. We've got who else? Baby Meatball from New York City. Hey, welcome from New York City. And then we've got Ellen Lee from Carolina Beach, North Carolina. Mew Mew 0203 from Tokyo. Hey, all the way from Tokyo. Christine from Brisbane. Awesome. Awesome. I love, love, love seeing all of you guys here. And also I wanted to welcome Alicia Brophy. Welcome to Bite Club. So happy to have you here and very, very excited. Okay. Anyway, I hope you guys had a great weekend. I hope you had a relaxing weekend. And that you're ready to start this whole week with whatever you've got going on, whether it is getting ready for back to school, going to work, what have you. I hope you're having a good start to your week. Anyway, let's face it, we're talking about litigation in basically every single live stream or every single video we do on this channel. So we're generally talking about things going wrong. It's usually not a particularly happy story. I mean, unless we happen to think that the right person won, in which case then we're like, yeah, it's a good thing. But but this one is tragic, downright absolutely tragic. We're talking about the death of someone, and we're talking about possible murder charge. Well, there is a murder charge, but possible murder conviction for someone in an intimate partner violence kind of situation. So I wanted to first off give a trigger warning, because if you're not familiar with this case, with this whole story, I want to make sure that everybody is aware ahead of time that this is a case that involves DV, it involves IPV, intimate partner violence, domestic violence. And we are going to be getting into, I'm going to go over the warrant for the arrest of the defendant. And that's going to, it includes an affidavit that is going to talk with some violence about the scene and about the way in which the death happened. So there is going to be a bit of that. So, keep that in mind. If that is something that is triggering for you, I want you to know ahead of time. So, alrighty. Anyway, with that, let's get into it. So I think, first off, I'm not sure how many of you are aware of this, but this is the name of the person that we are talking about is, well, the defendant, two people that we're talking about here. The defendant is Courtney Clenny, also known professionally on Instagram and OnlyFans as Courtney Taylor. She apparently has a lot of followers on Instagram. I wasn't aware of her before this case, but she, and I don't know how many followers she has on OnlyFans. I pay the least amount of attention possible to OnlyFans. She was just arrested on August 11th, I believe, for the death of her boyfriend. His name was Christian Toby Obumzeli. He died on April 3rd, 2022. So just earlier this month, this year. And she admitted to killing him, but she is saying that this is self-defense. But the reason why she was arrested was because there are certain things that didn't line up with her statement to the police when she was arrested initially. Or at least when they first talked to her in the investigation, I should say. So she was just arrested in Hawaii, even though the death happened in Miami, Florida. She was in Hawaii. Her attorney says that she was there for the purposes of rehabilitation for both drugs and for PTSD, supposedly. So, I don't know. We'll see what more comes of that information, but I thought that was relatively interesting. But let's go into, to get the details on it, I want to first read an article from the Tampa Bay Times, and then we'll go into the actual warrant with the affidavit attached and go through all of those details to see which way is possibly up on this kind of a case. Because like I always say, in any kind of a new case, we're always going to be starting from a neutral, objective standpoint. Doesn't matter who the two parties involved or multiple parties involved, who they are, where they come from. There is a possibility that one or both or neither could be telling the truth. So, okay, let's do this. Okay. Tampa Bay Times. Okay. It says Florida OnlyFans model Courtney Clenny charged with murder and boyfriend's death. The 26-year-old model was taken into custody in Hawaii and faces extradition to Florida to face charges. Okay. Courtney Clenny, the OnlyFans and Instagram model who fatally stabbed her boyfriend to death in Miami in April, has been arrested on a murder charge. The Miami Herald has learned. The 26-year-old Clenny was taken into custody on Wednesday in Hawaii and will be eventually extradited to Miami-Dade County to face trial. She's been charged with second-degree murder with a deadly weapon for the April 3rd stabbing of Christian Toby Obumzeli. Her arrest was confirmed Wednesday afternoon by her Miami defense lawyer, Frank Prieto, who said she'd been in Hawaii while in rehabilitation for substance abuse and post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm completely shocked, especially since we were cooperating with the investigation and offered to voluntarily surrender her if she were charged, Prieto said. We look forward to clearing her name in court. That's about what I would expect her attorney to be saying at this point, assuming that they have in fact been participating as well. The Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office in a press release on Wednesday evening said the arrest warrant remained sealed. State Attorney Catherine Fernandez, along with City Police Chief Manuel Morales and South Florida U.S. Marshal Gadiasis Serralta, we'll detail the arrest at a press conference on Thursday afternoon. The arrest caps a four-month investigation by Miami police homicide detectives and prosecutors into Clenny, whose killing of her boyfriend during a domestic dispute in a luxury Edgewater apartment garnered headlines across the world. Clenny's defense attorney insisted that she acted in self-defense and the killing was justified. But in the days after his death, Obumzeli's relatives called for Clenny's arrest, saying they did not believe he was ever a threat. Obumzeli worked in cryptocurrency. Known as Courtney Taylor on her social media platforms, Clenny boasted over 2 million followers on her social media platforms. She and Obumzeli had been dating less than 2 years, and their relationship had been plagued by domestic strife. She'd once been arrested for domestic battery in Las Vegas, and police had been called to their home in Austin, Texas on several occasions. The two had only lived in Miami for a few months at the One Paraiso building, 3131 Northeast 7th Avenue, where staff members had documented numerous domestic disturbance complaints about the couple and had even moved to evict them. Clenny and Obumzeli had broken up several times, although investigators believe that he'd moved back into the apartment by the first day of April. The Miami Herald earlier reported that Miami police responded to the apartment on April 1st, 2 days before the stabbing, over another domestic disturbance call. Finally, on the evening of April 3rd, just before 5 p.m., Clanny frantically called 911 to report Obenzeli had been stabbed. So that's the basics of it. It's a really, like I said, it's a really sad case. It's just an absolute tragedy. A lot of people on Twitter and elsewhere are talking about how this is similar enough to make it very eerie to the Depp v. Heard situation. So those of us who believe that that trial ended the right way, the defamation trial, look at the things that came out at trial, right, about her admitting to hitting him and her basically slicing off his finger by throwing sharp objects at him, and seeing the way that whole situation transpired. And then you look at a situation like this, and we'll get into, we're about to go into the affidavit for the warrant, and to see kind of some of the similarities to that particular case. That a lot of people find it very eerie. Anyway, let's take a look now at the arrest warrant. Okay. And to answer this question, wasn't there a video from Acro's the street into their balcony? I'm not sure about that, but there is an elevator video, which we will take a look at. Once it's referenced, the incident is referenced in the affidavit. So as soon as we get there, I'll switch over to the video. Okay. And also Jennifer Ortiz, thanks so much for becoming a YouTube member. Welcome to Bite Club. Happy to have you here. Okay. Okay. Let's see here. So it says here. All right. This is the actual warrant form. We're going to basically skip across that because the meat of it is the affidavit here. Okay, so it says, okay, so they have probable cause to arrest Courtney Taylor Clenny, here and after the defendant, a white female with the date of birth of something, 1996, Social Security, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so for one count of murder in the second degree of Christian Obenzeli, they're here and after the victim with a weapon, to wit, a knife, a life felony in violation of Florida statute, Section 782.042. So, death with a knife. Let's get into some of these details. Oh, first, just because, welcome to Bite Club. Happy to have you here. Thanks so much for joining and becoming a YouTube member. Okay. Affiant's background. Your affiant, Detective Yermaine Briseño, is a detective in MPD's homicide unit. Your affiant has almost 5 years of experience as a detective with prior experience in MPD's robbery unit. Your affiant specializes in the investigation of murders, attempted murders, robberies, false imprisonments, and kidnappings. Okay. Your affiant was assigned the lead investigator in the April 3rd, 2022 murder of Christian Obenzeli and documented under MPD case number, etc. So this is basically who it was, just to show that they probably did the job that they needed to be doing. Okay, facts in support of probable cause. This affidavit is being submitted for the limited purpose of establishing probable cause and therefore does not include every aspect, fact, or detail surrounding this investigation. One, initial police response. MPD and City of Miami Fire Rescue responded to One Paraiso Residences, 3131 North East 7th Avenue, Unit 2201, Miami, Florida, 33173, here and after one Paraiso, regarding a male suffering from an apparent stab wound on April 3rd, 2022. Upon arrival, officers located the defendant cradling the body of the victim with an apparent stab wound to the chest. The defendant was taken into custody, and officers rendered aid to the victim until fire rescue arrived. The victim was transported to Jackson Memorial Hospital, Ryder Trauma Center, where he succumbed to his injuries and was pronounced deceased by Dr. Misoso. The defendant was taken to MPD headquarters, where post-Miranda, she provided an audio and video recorded statement. Following the defendant's statement, she was released pending further investigation and consultation with the state attorney's office. So post-Miranda, it looks like, at least according to the police, assuming that this affidavit is 100% accurate, which I have no reason to doubt it at this point, they gave her Miranda rights, which basically is what a lot of people are familiar with these days, where the cops say that you have a right to say nothing at all if you don't want to. You have a right to an attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so she apparently waived those rights and made a statement. Generally speaking, not the best decision in the world. Usually most lawyers, any lawyer, basically every lawyer will tell you, don't talk to cops until you have a lawyer present, until you've been able to talk to a lawyer first, because you never know what portion of your statement is going to be used against you. And you'll see exactly here why, in my opinion, I think that there are some inconsistencies from what she said that are going to be very damning for her moving forward. Part 2, investigation. The victim's body was transported to Miami-Dade County Medical Examiner's Department. An autopsy was performed by Chief Medical Examiner Kenneth Hutchins, MD. Dr. Hutchins determined that the cause of death was a stab wound to the chest and manner of death was homicide. So when we're talking about manner of death, if you're not familiar with these kinds of cases, when the medical examiner talks about the manner of death, we're talking about there are several different types of manners of death that the medical examiner will label on the death, either accidental, natural causes, suicide, or homicide. I think it's those four. And so when we're talking about homicide, that's not a legal definition. This is basically where they say that this person died at the hands of another person. So the legal question comes down to whether or not there was intent, whether or not there was a possible affirmative defense, such as self-defense. This is where the legal discussion gets involved. But where we're talking about what the medical examiner concluded, we're looking at whether they determined if this was an accident or suicide or something else. So, let me get some more super chats here. Uncivil Law, thanks for your super chat. Says one rule when read Miranda, shut the F up. Yes. Very true. Generally speaking. Yeah. Talk to a lawyer first, because that is your right. KWNY Upstate says, thanks so much for your super chat. First of all, says, if you go to prison, isn't murder not worth it? We should stop the pointless killing. I mean, I think a lot of people would venture to say that it's not worth it regardless. And yeah, I think most of us would be in favor of no pointless killing, I think. But thank you for the super chat. Okay. All right. Specifically, he found that the victim was stabbed and that the knife punctured the subclavian artery in his right chest. The knife entered in a downward angle to the depth of 8 centimeters. Following the medical examiner's findings, MPD presented and consulted with the state attorney's office regarding the initial facts. As a result, various investigative steps were taken by MPD and the state attorney's office, including several warrants and subpoenas. Additionally, information was received from other out-of-state law enforcement agencies. While not an exhaustive list, MPD investigators and state attorney's office prosecutors have reviewed video and recorded statements, 911 calls, records, and data, including cell phone extraction data, collectively referred to herein as the evidence. Accordingly, evidence obtained showed the defendant and victim had a tempestuous relationship since November of 2020, with multiple incidents of domestic violence from both sides over the period of their relationship. One Paraiso security and building staff documented so many incidents of arguing, including complaints from tenants as far as two floors above the defendant and victim's unit, that One Paraiso management was moving toward legal action to evict the defendant and victim from the condominium. So their screaming matches got loud enough that they would carry, their voices would carry two floors up, apparently. While certainly not one-sided, the evidence shows there were prior incidents of the defendant being physically violent with the victim. For example, in July 2021, the defendant was arrested in Las Vegas for domestic battery on the victim in their hotel. Similarly, surveillance from One Paraiso showed an incident in February 2022 where the defendant aggressively attacked the victim in the elevator. And so here, I think this is where this is. So now I'm going to show a video that was uploaded from Fox 7 News onto Twitter. Let me share this here, so you guys can see exactly what they're talking about here. Okay. All right. So here is, I hope you guys can, I don't know if there is sound for this because I think it's just surveillance footage. So this is from February 21st, 2022. And okay, so you've got the elevator opening. She walks in. He walks in. She's... Okay. All right. And then it's just playing again. So that's the video. And the tweet here says, this is video of a previous encounter between murder suspect Courtney Clenny and her now deceased boyfriend. The February 21st, 2022 incident shows her attacking him in an elevator before he pushed her away. Weeks later, she'd fatally stab Christian Obenzeli in her Miami apartment. 4 months later, she's charged with second-degree murder. Officials say he died from an 8-centimeter stab wound April 3rd. Clenny was booked in Hawaii and has waived extradition. So, yeah, so this is now, of course, the fact that she appears to be the aggressor in that incident. I mean, it looks to me like, you know, he's not exactly just taking it, right? Because he is putting his arm out against her, you know, but it looks like it's more like defensive moves to sort of like keep her at arm's length. That's what it looks like to me anyway. The fact that she appears to be the aggressor here does not necessarily mean that she was the aggressor in every single incident. So keep that in mind. But at the same time, it does look damning. It does look damning. And especially the fact that she has a record of DV against him, particularly that she had been arrested back in Las Vegas, for IPV against him. It's pretty damning. If I'm her attorney, I'm looking at this and having a real conversation or preparing for a real conversation with her saying, this doesn't look good for you. This really doesn't look good for you. Okay. The defendant and victim moved into the apartment at One Paraiso in January 2022. Almost immediately, incidents of violence and arguments began with One Paraiso security and building staff documenting many incidents. This tumult also caused the defendant and victim to separate various times, including the last week of March 2022, when the defendant expelled the victim from their collective apartment while the defendant's mother was in town. After the defendant's mother left to go home to Texas, the defendant and victim rekindled their relationship on Friday, April 1st, 2022. The victim moved back into the apartment at that time. Arguments began almost immediately with police responding and contacting the defendant, who appeared intoxicated when she made the report on the evening of April 1st, 2022. I'm very curious to know what that April 1st statement looks like that she gave to the police about the particular incident. I'm very interested in hearing about what happened on that night and what was said about it. Evidence shows that Sunday, April 3rd, 2022 began peacefully with the defendant and victim playing with their dogs in the apartment. At some point, the victim left their apartment and returned with Subway sandwiches for himself and the defendant. Key fob records show the victim left the apartment at 1:15 p.m. and returned at 4:32 p.m. Surveillance videos show the victim returning to the apartment at that time via service elevator one with their two dogs and actually leaving the elevator at 4:33 p.m. At the same time, the defendant finished and uploaded an Instagram live video to her page. Call detail records show the defendant called the victim at 4:01 p.m. just before she went live on Instagram, and again at 4:33 p.m. shortly after posting the live video and his arrival to the apartment. So basically, you line up the timing here to so that it's 1:15 p.m. He leaves, presumably to get Subway sandwich, maybe some other errands. Then we've got 4:01 p.m. She uploads her live on Instagram. Or she goes live on Instagram. Then she's got 4:32 p.m., like half an hour later, he comes home. And then she also has a phone call with him, basically at that time that he like pretty much comes home right after she finishes her Instagram live. Based on phone records and testimony from the defendant's mother, Deborah Clenny, hereinafter D. Clenny, via a recorded telephone call with the police, a time frame for when the stabbing occurred was able to be determined. In that recorded call, D. Clenny confirmed she was on the phone with the defendant via two phone calls that started at 4:43 p.m. and continued until 4:56 p.m. D. Clenny further confirmed she was on the phone with the defendant at the time of the incident. Thus, the stabbing must have occurred between 4:43 p.m., fewer than 10 minutes after the victim returned to the apartment, and 4:57 p.m. when the defendant called 911. So, Pamela C., you want to know what does waived extradition mean? Basically, where she's going to agree to go back to Florida. From Hawaii, because she was arrested in Hawaii, but she's been charged in Florida. So it's like, this was the thing that really caught me off guard here, that it seems like the incident happened while she was on the phone with her mom. I also want to know like how, like, was she on speakerphone, I guess? Did he know that she was on speakerphone if she was on speakerphone? Like there are so many parts to this that I don't quite fully understand yet, but I really want to piece together exactly how this transpired in this way. The defendant's call detail records shows the aforementioned calls reflecting the defendant called D. Clenny at 4:43 p.m. for a call that lasted just over 6 minutes until 4:49 p.m. and a second call at 4:49 p.m. for a little over 7 minutes until 4:56 p.m. So she called her mom twice during this incident. Accordingly, the evidence establishes that the stabbing must have occurred in the intervening 13 minutes. At the same time that the defendant called Dee Clenny, her neighbors began calling Juan Parizo to report a disturbance at the apartment. Juan Parizo security called 911 at 4:46 p.m., so 3 minutes after her initial phone call with her mom, notifying them of the disturbance. 11 minutes later, at 4:57 p.m., the defendant called 911 to inform the police the victim was suffering from a stab wound and requesting help. On that call, the victim can be heard in the background repeatedly saying he is dying and cannot feel his arm. The defendant is also heard saying, "I'm so sorry, baby." So, and as we know from DV situations, her saying, "I'm so sorry," could be an admission of guilt, or it could be what is very common with DV victims that you know, in a particular scenario, someone is apologizing for someone for something that they really should not have to apologize for. So far, though, that seems like a justification that doesn't really fit this situation based on what we're seeing so far. In her telephone recorded statement to the police on the date of the incident, Dee Clenny stated she heard the defendant yelling at the victim to leave the apartment and the defendant saying the victim was quote unquote lying. In her explanation to the police regarding the content of the phone calls of that day, Dee Clenny did not say she discussed the incident with the defendant. However, investigators know Dee Clenny did communicate with the defendant about the incident because investigators saw a text message from quote unquote mom on the defendant's phone recorded at 5:25 p.m. So about 25, 30 minutes afterwards, that mentions self-defense and advised her not to say anything to investigators without an attorney. Good advice. Too bad she didn't listen to mom. Too bad for her, I should say. In addition to omitting her conversations with the defendant, Dee Clenny's recorded statement also omits any claim that the defendant said she was being attacked by the victim during the call. So it's not clear to me from this whether this omission of these details from the mom's statement to the police, whether that omission was in response to a question or if she just didn't include that and nobody asked her about it. Although the defendant admitted to having caused the victim's injuries in her post-Miranda recorded statement, she also provided several inconsistent accounts about the incident. The defendant claims she armed herself with a knife in response to the victim having shoved her against the wall by the neck, though not choking her, and then she claimed he threw her to the ground, but then allowed her to get up. The defendant's physical body was documented on the date of the incident, and there were no injuries to her person to corroborate this account. At no time did the defendant claim the victim was armed with any type of weapon. In describing the stabbing incident, the defendant claimed she threw the knife at the victim from a distance in excess of 10 feet. Based on the location and depth of the stab wound, the medical examiner opined that throwing the knife from that distance would not have caused that fatal stab wound. In trying to explain her actions that day to the police, the defendant stated, "I do not think this was, I don't know. I really don't know if this was justified at all." And that's one of the most damning statements I think that she has, that she even said herself that she didn't know if that was justified. So as soon as I read this portion of the affidavit earlier today, I just was absolutely flabbergasted and floored. And this is another reason why you would want to talk to an attorney first. This is a big problem for her defense. This is a very big problem for her defense because it's one thing to be overheard saying to the victim, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry," because there could be many reasons why you're sorry, right? There could be many, many different meanings behind that. But her talking about being unsure as to whether or not her use of force was justified, that's really bad. That's really bad. If I'm her attorney, I'm getting ready for, like I said, I'm getting ready for a very real conversation with her about what her options are. Part 3, crime scene. And just so you guys know, it gets a bit more graphic. It talks about, you know, blood stains and stuff like that. So if that's too much for you, just fair warning. I want to try to give as many disclaimers for this as possible. Crime scene. Okay. Part three, crime scene. The condominium is a 3-bedroom, 3-bathroom unit with a private foyer. While each bedroom has a bathroom, according to the floor plan, the master bedroom is the largest bedroom that has access to a terrace shared with the living room and faces east overlooking Biscayne Bay. The other two bedrooms face south, with one other bedroom having its own terrace that faces west. Pertinent here is the master bedroom and the bedroom with the westerly facing terrace, herein referred to as guest bedroom. The physical crime scene showed droplets of blood by the kitchen island dripping to the master bedroom / bathroom and back into the living room. In the living room by the couch, a bloody knife along with a bloody bed sheet was located. There was additionally a blood trail leading from the living room to the guest bedroom. At the entrance of the guest bedroom, there was a puddle of coagulated blood and blood transfer on the wall, evidencing that the victim collapsed in this room before attempting to return towards the front door. Upon police arrival, the victim was in the defendant's arms at the intersection of the two guest bedrooms in another puddle of coagulated blood. The amount of blood throughout the condominium at different levels, including two large pools, evidences the victim was bleeding for an extended period before police arrived. The bloody knife, similar to the knives on the kitchen counter, was found on the living room floor next to the couch and bloody bedsheet. This part right here about the extended period before the police arrived, this makes me wonder if the family of Christian Obenzeli is going to try to have some kind of an investigation into the police response to see if there was something that if he could have survived this had they responded sooner. I would not be surprised if there was some sort of an investigation that got opened up for that purpose as well. So, and I say that because from what we know, the mom was on the phone with her during the incident. There's 13 minutes of phone call for that. He only came home at 4:33. And so the incident happened to be between 4:43 and 4:57. So those 13 minutes, and she called the police at 4:57. So another question that I have is, what time did the police arrive? Because they don't say in this affidavit what time they actually arrived. And Pamela C, to answer your question, she actually called the police herself. That's the one move that I would say is like maybe a good move by her that doesn't seem particularly shady in this particular situation. Conclusion, part four. The evidence in the case evaluated in its totality reflect that the victim and the defendant were in a violent and toxic domestic relationship for over 2 years. The incidents of violence began escalating with the defendant throwing and or using weapons on various occasions. These incidents culminated on April 3rd, 2022, with the defendant acting without justification and causing the death of the victim by stabbing the victim in an imminently dangerous act, demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life. Accordingly, based on the totality of the circumstances, your affiant has probable cause to arrest defendant Courtney Taylor Clenny, a white female with a birth date of something 1996, social security number, all of this stuff is redacted, for one count of murder in the second degree of Christian Obenzeli with a weapon, to wit, a knife, a life felony in violation of Florida statute section 782.042. So what do you guys think? This looks like a particularly damaging case to me. Now, of course, this is the police side. This is the prosecution side. I would be interested to see exactly what her attorney argues in terms of like how this was self-defense. But the fact that that she didn't have any kind of bruising on her is a problem for her. Granted, I mean, I would be interested to know who examined her, when they examined her, and if she has a tendency to bruise or not bruise. Those could be factors. Not everybody shows bruises in the same way, right? But I don't know. I mean, even with that, like I'm trying to look at this from multiple perspectives. I still see this as I'm incredibly skeptical of her defense. So she's in the worst part of it, in my opinion, is, well, number one, her saying that she threw the knife from over 10 feet away. And then the medical examiner saying, no, there was a downward movement that went 8 centimeters into him. There's no way that she could have thrown that and had it result like that. I would be interested to see what her defense theory is on that particularly as well. But anyway, I don't know, man. This looks pretty damning. And especially her statement saying that it probably that she wasn't sure if it was justified. So, but basically, that's that, guys. I think this is a pretty bad case for her. I'm very interested in following this. Let me know what you guys think. If you guys want to see more on this as it progresses. She was just arrested on the 11th. I actually am not sure why, or not sure if she has actually been transferred to Florida just yet, based on reporting I was trying to find on it. But I plan on keeping tabs. and I would anticipate, because this is a state criminal trial, this is probably one that has a decent chance of being televised at some point. If that one is, I would be very interested in also probably live streaming that trial as well. Let me know what you guys think in the chat and in the comments below if you're watching this on a replay. Other than that, I guess that's all I've got for today. I hope you guys have a great rest of your Monday, great rest of your week. Otherwise, I'll see you guys tomorrow.